Power comes with a price. For Jude Duarte, that price was exile from the treacherous fairy realm she had come to call home. Once the High Queen of Elfame, she now wastes away in the mortal world, watching mindless television and training her younger brother Oak in the political arts he'll need as the future king. The irony isn't lost on her. Kidnapped from the human world as a child, she now longs for the dangerous beauty of fairy with physical intensity. Even the air feels wrong here, lacking the intoxicating magic that permeates her true home. When her twin sister Taryn appears at her door with blood on her hands, confessing to murdering her husband Locke, Jude sees an opportunity. Taryn begs her to return to Elfame and impersonate her during the murder investigation. Despite the mortal danger of breaking her exile, Jude agrees, her heart racing at the chance to return to both her throne and to Cardan, the High King whose complicated relationship with her defies simple explanation. The scheme is reckless, but for someone who has survived years in the treacherous fairy courts through cunning and determination, it's a calculated risk worth taking. Disguised as Taryn, Jude navigates Elfheim's glittering court like a dancer on a knife's edge. Courtiers press close, testing her knowledge of her twin's mannerisms, until her illusion shatters upon receiving a royal summons to the High King's chambers. Face to face with Cardan, her facade crumbles as he reveals he's known her identity all along. His mention of undelivered letters sparks confusion. Someone has interfered with their communication. Before they can investigate, an explosion rocks the palace. Madoc, her adoptive father, has launched his assault to overthrow the throne. Captured and dragged to Madoc's military camp, Jude discovers the legendary smith Grimson crafting powerful weapons for the rebellion, including an enchanted earring for Cardan that transforms into a deadly ruby spider. When Madoc sees through her disguise, their confrontation ends with his blade piercing her side. As he raises his sword for the killing blow, arrows slice through the air. Her sisters have arrived with the red cap warrior Grima Mog in a desperate rescue attempt. With blood soaking the frozen ground, Jude recalls lore about the High King's connection to the land. In desperate inspiration, she demands her wounds be packed with Elfheim soil before being stitched closed. Something extraordinary happens. Delicate white flowers push through the frozen ground where her blood fell, signifying the land acknowledges her as its rightful queen. When confronting Cardan in his study, he reveals the cruel irony of her exile. His decree was actually a riddle, and as queen, she could have pardoned herself at any moment during her months of suffering. Worse still, his numerous letters, filled with explanations, never reached her. The crown weighs heavily on Cardan, who shares a prophecy that has haunted him. His reign would bring destruction to the crown. Yet he embraces Jude because of her strength, confessing he trusts her to stop him should he become the monster others feared. His vulnerability begins cracking her defenses, though years of betrayal make her hesitant to fully trust him. When Madoc arrives for parley, tension fills the court. He challenges Cardan with theatrical flourishes, drawing an ancient, powerful sword that splits Elfheim's throne. Madoc proposes a contest where the folk would choose between them, offering Queen Orlog's life as collateral. In a stunning move, Cardan removes the blood crown, refusing to gamble with Elfheim's rule. He declares that true loyalty cannot be compelled by magic or mandate. Then, demonstrating unexpected strength, he breaks the crown in two with his bare hands. The folk bow to him willingly, but at a terrible price. Cardan's eyes turn pitch black, his form elongates, and he transforms into an enormous serpent. Grimson, with his dying breath, confesses to cursing the crown before the creature strikes him down. As panic spreads, Jude steps forward with steel-spined composure. She commands Madoc's capture while the massive serpent that was once her husband slithers away into the depths of Elfheim. Madoc approaches Jude with a calculated offer, a magical bridal crafted by Grimson that would grant her control over Cardan in his serpent form. the price? A marriage alliance between Oak and their queen, Surin. Though repulsed by the thought of enslaving Cardan, Jude takes the bridal without making any binding promises. In a moment of desperation, Jude sends a message. If you ever loved him, help me. Nikasia, Cardan's farger lover and princess of the undersea, appears and kneels before Jude's throne, eager to join the rescue. She reveals Cardan's hidden kindnesses, secret mercies Jude never knew about, creating an unexpected bond between two women who share deep connections to the transformed king. With guidance from Mother Marrow and the Alder King Severin, Jude discovers the Serpent's Bridal's sinister truth. Using it would permanently bind her to the Serpent, another of Orlod's deceptions. This knowledge, combined with her growing mastery of the Queen of Elfheim's powers, helps her devise an intricate strategy to free Cardan from his curse. Jude and Cardan return to the palace in a royal carriage, both blood-soaked, a visceral reminder of Faerie's transformative violence. In a stunning display of restored power, Cardan heals the fractured earth and transforms the broken throne into two separate seats of power, each adorned with living briars blooming with dark flowers, symbolizing their shared rule and evolved relationship. During a quiet moment, Jude finally confesses her feelings, tracing how her love for Cardan evolved from grudging appreciation of his wit through his rescue of her from the undersea to their complex present. When asked about his time as the Serpent, Cardan describes existing in absolute darkness, consumed by hatred and terror, with her presence as his only constant. The coronation ceremony becomes a platform for justice. Jude sentences Madoc to permanent exile in the mortal world with a prohibition against wielding weapons, striking at the core of his warrior identity, while mirroring how he once forced her parents to live in the mortal world before murdering them. In the end, Jude and Cardan rule on twin thrones, embodying equal partnership. Their evolution from enemies to lovers illustrates the book's core message. True strength comes from balancing power with vulnerability, mortality with magic, and duty with love. Their visit to the mortal world serves as more than just a cultural exchange. Cardan's first pizza party represents bridging seemingly insurmountable divides, while the impromptu wedding celebration, combining mortal traditions with fairy elements, symbolizes potential harmony between different worlds. Their final toast captures their journey's essence, to family, both chosen and blood, to fairyland, their responsibility, to pizza, joy and simple pleasures, to stories, narrative's power, and to scheming great schemes, using cleverness constructively. Celebrating across both worlds, surrounded by family that transcends mortal and fairy boundaries, fulfills Jude's deepest desire, finding belonging while remaining authentic.